Welcome to the Hockey Strength Podcast, the official podcast of the world's best resource for hockey strength and conditioning information. HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the 32nd episode of the Hockey Strength Podcast, brought to you by the world's best resource for training hockey players, HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com. I'm your host, Brian Sippets. If you'd like to contact me with questions about today's show, you can reach me at HockeyStrengthPodcast@gmail.com. If you haven't checked in with HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com, right now you're going to find over 800 articles, webinars, videos, and training programs, all dedicated to improving the strength, power, and health of hockey players. So definitely check it out if you're a strength and conditioning professional, a hockey coach, or a hockey family. We know you're going to find a lot of really useful information from the top strength and conditioning coaches in the NHL, NCAA, and private facilities. If you're new to HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com, you can gain instant access to our members-only content for just $1 for the first 7 days. After that first week, you'll want to stay on board for all of our newest content for just $14.95 a month, or you can choose to get 2 months free by investing for the year at just $149. So take a look, there's a ton of great information that's going to help you and your players, and we know you're going to love all that content. On today's episode of the Hockey Strength Podcast, we're going to be talking with the president of Crash Conditioning in Calgary, Alberta, Doug Crashley. Known by most of his athletes as Crash, Doug has built an outstanding practice where he works with the NHL's elite players, all the way down to youth players looking to develop. One motto at Crash's place is, not for everyone. So we're going to talk about why that is, and also why he doesn't want hockey players in his gym, even though a majority of his clients are hockey players. Sounds confusing, but you'll get it when we dig into that topic. Before we get started with that, in the last couple podcasts, we've announced the date for our live event that's going on this spring. The Great Lakes Hockey Strength and Conditioning Clinic is going to be held at Advantage Strength and Conditioning in Ann Arbor, Michigan on April 30th, 2016. Now, this was an awesome event last year, and we had a great response from the participants. So it's definitely something we're going to continue year after year. Right now you can head to GreatLakesHockeyStrength.com to see a full list of speakers and topics. This year our speakers include Devin McConnell from UMass Lowell, Joe Marr from the University of Michigan, Dave Sensor from Ferris State, physical therapist and return to play specialist Greg Roskovensky, and the assistant director of Total Package Hockey in Detroit, Sean Perkins. We're really excited about this year's speakers, and this year we have the ability to do some hands-on presentations, so the value and usefulness of the information is going to be really great. Another thing we're definitely going to continue from last year is the social at the end of the conference. That ended up being kind of the best way to close out the day. We had a chance to meet a lot of the participants, and we had some really great conversations. Like last year, we'll pick up the first couple rounds, and we're really looking forward to keeping that tradition alive. To get everyone ready for the clinic, or to give you a taste of what the clinic is like, we're going to start releasing the videos from last year's presentation on the site. We had some really great presentations about monitoring, creating a yearly plan, and unconscious learning, among other topics. So be sure to check those out on the site as they come up. Also, in the next 5 episodes of the Hockey Strength Podcast, my guests will be the speakers for this year's clinic coming up on April 30th. So you get a sneak peek at their presentations and hopefully pick up some information before you even register for the event. All right, well, that's enough about us. Let's get to our conversation with Doug Crashley. All right, today we get the chance to talk to Doug Crashley, known by most people as Crash. He's president of Crash Conditioning with 3 facilities in Calgary, Kelowna, and the newest facility in Lloydminster, Alberta. Doug, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, great. Thanks for having me, everybody.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit. I know you're busy. It's been tough to get a hold of you. You're just opening the new facility in Lloydminster. How's that all panning out for you?
Yeah, you know what? It's gone really well. So what Lloydminster was is a former client of mine had actually opened up his own place and was doing his thing. When he finished playing hockey, I kind of drove him in a direction of going to school and helped him back then. And about in the last year, he's asked me to sort of take over his hockey program. He was actually doing CrossFit as well, and it was starting to blend too much. So over the last few months, about 12 months now, we've been sort of taking over the hockey side and redeveloping that culture to bring it to the Crash side. And I know from the feedback we're getting from clients of his there, and some parents even called me even this week and going, we're looking forward to doing it again. So I think it went over really well, just basically stabilizing a really hockey-focused brand and helping him on the training side a little. It's gone really well.
Awesome. Yeah, you know, you mentioned it's a hockey brand, and honestly, that's all I've seen in your facility are hockey players. Do you have a history of playing? How did you get into working with almost exclusively hockey players?
You know what, I grew up playing hockey, and like a lot of guys, and obviously women that play as well. I grew up playing, it was my passion. I thought I was going to play in the NHL. It obviously didn't happen, but after taking a little bit of time away from hockey after I quit, I think at 19, I was taking kinesiology, just doing, you know, just in college, going, I'm going to get into fitness. I like working out and so on. But that'd be great. And then I actually had a coach or an instructor that was a coach in the hockey team, Carl Taylor, who's now coaching, you know, minor pro and whatnot, American League and East Coast League. And he was teaching a class. He was new to teaching. It was a business class. And I don't remember a thing what he taught in business, but I do remember his aura, the way he spoke. I used to get adrenaline rushes in classes, and that's when I realized, you know what, I'm still passionate about hockey. I want to get back into hockey. Like, I'm a hockey guy. I feel like I'm that kind of world. The coaching side of things is more what I am about than maybe training so much. I think that world of, like, believing in more than just sort of one aspect, a more holistic approach, was, and it drove me. And from there, that's what I did. I focused strictly on hockey, and it was pretty, at the time, who's now the Detroit Red Wings strength coach, and he was in L.A. and Pittsburgh previously. Mike Kadar was the assistant coach on that team, and he was just getting into it. He had been away from that part of the world for a while and was taking a CSCS, and I ended up talking to him and actually and getting some direction as far as, like, when I'm in school, what direction to take. And that's where it all kind of drove me in the direction I am now.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, obviously, along the way, you had some great connections. You know, you've got former teachers, former coaches, you know, NHL connections there too. And, you know, that has a lot to do with it. I think you're in a obviously a hockey rich area. And you started in Calgary, is that right?
Yeah, I didn't grow up here. I actually started when I was in University of Lethbridge. I started doing a little bit there, but yeah, I moved to Calgary with my girlfriend at the time. My wife had opened up a little fitness center herself. And then when I came to Calgary, I started, and to be honest, you know, I knew I was going to be in hockey. I knew that was my passion. That was my only passion. And what I did is I just spent all my time I could in rinks, watching games, meeting people, going to games, volunteering with Hockey Canada, coaching on the ice with little kids if I had to, whatever it took to sort of completely dive into the hockey world and understand it at all levels. And I mean, the training part was the training part. And we constantly learn. I think that happens whether you've been doing it for 1 year or 20 years. But for me, I really had to kind of dive into how the minor hockey markets worked, how junior was. I wasn't from Alberta. I didn't have a lot of connections in Alberta, so I went out and, to be honest, I hustled. I tell people all the time, like, you know, I hustled. I worked my butt off and tried to understand and know as much about the people, the sport, the market, and got off after that way.
Yeah, I mean, you bring up a good point. Not only, you know, you're working with the NHL guys and really high-level junior players and high-level players across the country, but you also work with quite a few kids at the developmental level. What did you learn maybe from, it must have been from your time coaching there. Like, how does your programming differ from, you know, the kids you're working with at the developmental level all the way up to the NHL level?
Yeah, I think there's two parts to that answer. I think one of the things is, I mean, for every player that's in the NHL today, at one point they were a kid. We all know that. Maybe it's obvious. So I think it's always fun and exciting to be able to attach ourselves to NHL players, and that's great. But for me, a lot of the players that I have that are National Hockey League players now, pros now, or even college and major junior players, they were with us at a young age, whether that's Bantam, some of them were maybe peewee age, mostly Bantam, midget age, so 15, 16, 17, starting off with us. And for me, that I take a lot of pride in having, like, a kid like Thomas Hickey, who's a New York Islander, start training with us when he's 14. Or Jordan Everly and Edmonton Oilers, he was 15. And it's neat to be part of that sort of, that segment, part of their life, not just, you know, being able to attach ourselves to them as NHLers, but actually be part of their full course of development. So that's part of it. I think also, now that I'm a father, it's actually opened my eyes up. And I was very anti, like, sub sub 15, or I was kind of kept people away, away from us that were like 14 or younger. The 14 was kind of the start point. And I've been a little more open recently, and it probably is because of being a dad, but to a little bit of younger kids coming in and teaching them how to move. And two parts of it, I think one of the soft and being a parent and understanding, like watching kids at a young age, and then also watching them at 14 or 15. And for kids who only play hockey, and it happens all the time now, super specialized at a young age in hockey, and watching how poorly they move and how negatively that affects their ability to develop as they get later in hockey, and how hard it is to project where they're going to be. By being able to go back and give them more athletic abilities and skills, I think that hopefully is influencing our game, at least regionally here, and trying to make better athletes at a younger age so that we're not seeing many kids kind of tap out or at least top out. As I've seen for a while, you see these great hockey players in Bantam and Midget, but you'd almost see it happening at 16, 17, 18. They weren't developing. You see they couldn't run, jump. They couldn't hinge. They couldn't throw a ball. You're like, listen, this isn't good. So getting some younger kids in a little bit, not overstructuring, but teaching them how to move, balance, and jump, where maybe if it wasn't for having us helping them with that, they wouldn't do as much of that. They'd play hockey and maybe just go golf. So I think that's been part of what we've done. And with the younger kids, comparison to their older athletes, I think you just regress to the movement pattern. So you want to teach them to run, and you want to teach them to jump, land, decelerate, accelerate. I think you go back to with the younger kids, just teaching them to do all those things and move better fundamentally. Can they drive their knees? Can they swing their arms in sequence? You know, running without looking goofy. Can they stop from a run? Can they change directions? Just simple stuff, and making it at a young age, you just got to make it fun. You make it fun. You teach them how to be competitive. You teach them a little bit of how to work despite of it being tough and despite of it not being easy. Teach them how to work through sort of a little bit of failures. And then as you go with the older athletes, then you start to get a little more technical. You're trying to develop things that specifically help certain parts of their game, or you deal specifically with muscle groups and patterns that you need to polish up quite a bit. Where at a young age, I think you're going to play with all the patterns. You want them to move and bounce and jump and be springy, and at the same time, you want them to be, you know, willing to deal with a little bit of tough stuff as well.
Yeah, you bring up a good point there. I mean, the youth market, I think, exists because of early sports specialization. And you're right, you get kids that just absolutely can't move or don't, you know, you can barely recognize them as an athlete when they're not on the ice. So, you know, in one way, people see it as, oh, people are just looking at the youth market and seeing it as a opportunity to grab some money, and what are they really doing, you know, strength training with these kids. But there is so much to learn because extracurricular activities and additional athletics just aren't really there anymore. So I think, you know, you play a more important role than ever before in really teaching kids how to move and making sure that they have those great motor patterns and that they're moving well as athletes before they actually, you know, get into more high-level training and high-level athletics.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, like, one of the things, you know, if you asked me 5 years ago or 10 years ago, I'd have been like, oh, keep the kids away from me. I think these guys, I would chirp it a bit myself and be like, hey, it's just a cash grab, and it's a headache, you're dealing with parents and this and that. And there'd be times we'd let the odd, you know, younger player in, and sometimes it'd be like, I always joke with a couple of kids in particular that are coming through the system now, where their dads honestly wouldn't leave us alone. They text us and call us, come to the gym, and just until we almost said, okay, bring your kid in. And then the next step was, hey, stop standing in the gym, go sit in the front, have a seat on the couch, relax, let us look at the kid and have some fun, and teach them to move. And they almost like harassed us into bring their kids along. And it's funny, I was really against a lot of the younger athletes, and like everybody else, like I said, I had the same thoughts towards it, but then I started seeing it. And you see kids who and really not play other sports, not even be able to skip, or when they run, they don't look correct. They're sloppy in their ankles, and seeing that correlation of how poorly that helps, like how poorly that affects their development later, when really the separating factor is, do you have athletic base to take it to the next level? And I think when you get past that sort of somewhere between 16 and 18, you start to see it. The better athletes who, again, they have to think the game and they have to be competitive, but the better athletes will tend to keep getting better, keep developing in their game itself, where you'll see some players who are way more as hockey players, like Nate, don't have the athleticism. they start to kind of, about 16, 17, 18, maybe 19, they're not making the same stride. They don't have the ability to take it to the next speed. They're not as explosive. They're not, they don't move as well. And I've seen that, unfortunately. And that's a little bit for me. And it is tough. I mean, with the younger athletes, it's a little bit of a balance you don't want. For me, I don't want too many at the same time. I'm not trying to make it a cash grab. So you're trying to figure out how to do it. But you do get a chance to, over a longer term, help an athlete become a better, hopefully a better hockey player, and at least give them better skills so that they can develop their game. And I think that's pretty important.
Yeah, for sure. And I know, you know, just from hearing you present, you know, over the summer, I know that you have a kind of a really special thing. I think, honestly, this is what has led to your success is your expectations and the culture that you've created in your facilities. You know, you talk about certain rules like, you know, no hats in the facility, and where a lot of times, you know, that may turn some kids off. I think for you, it's really worked because I think it's something that you live, and it's a culture that you insist on that's consistent. So talk a little bit about that culture that you've created that, you know, that so many kids seem to like because they're sticking with you. I mean, if they're sticking with you from age 14 on up, you're doing something right. So talk a little bit about the culture that you've developed and why that works for you.
Yeah, you know what? I think early on when I was first kind of trying to develop my path a little bit, I would see hockey players work out, and I would even at other places, and I worked for a couple of weeks on the West Coast at the time, a pretty well-established strength coach. I remember seeing hats on back with cut-off sleeves, and I just thought it didn't look athletic. It looked hockey. And I've always thought the one thing I wanted to sort of bring branding-wise into hockey and hockey training was almost pull the hockey out of it a little bit and go as an athlete, look like an athlete, and hopefully move like an athlete. And then also, I like the way I look. My coaches don't wear hats. Obviously, they didn't have clear lines of communications. I just think I'm not trying to be where I'm George Steinbrenner and they can't have sideburns. But at the same time, I want them to have less restrictions and take away some of the pretentiousness of, you know, I think it's a little bit of that, I don't want to call it like a social dynamic where I don't want to have, you know, the back and forth from the kids and the bullying. I didn't want to have this act or facade. I wanted to have everybody just come in as a raw athlete, open to learning. And at the same time, they needed to learn to work and have a little bit of structure. And I think part of it is, and a lot of people are going to be a lot, maybe that's not the way that I think. They need to have a master when it comes to training. They need to be a little bit of a boss and a hierarchy. And for me to get what I thought were the results I needed for them, there's always that relationship. I always say it's a triangle. It's the coaches, the athlete, and their support grouping of their parents. And part of that was we needed to have some preset rules and structures and expectations. And those expectations were, you know, you're committed to it. You're there. There's no excuses. The parents obviously have to be part of that support team. And not at the same time, part of it was pushing certain parents to, hey, you need to be structured yourself. And I expect them to be in bed and need to eat well at the same time. Pulling some parents back, going, hey, don't be all over your kid. We're going to do that now. We need to. Your 15-year-old needs dad to be dad and mom to be mom, and let us be coach in the summer. We got some off season here. Let us do our job. I think those are important parts of that relationship and that dynamic. And along with that was a structure of, yeah, no sleeveless shirts. And look at pros like an athlete first and foremost. The reason I hate hats so much is I find that with hockey players with hats, they wear them. You can't see their eyes. I want to see eyes. Just as important as a coach. As a coach, I don't like to see coaches wear hats because it covers their eyes. It cuts down that line of communication. But also, players put them on backwards. And when you see an athlete put a hat on backwards, especially hockey players, they pull their brim down towards their neck, and you'll see it tilting, that forward tilt at the neck. And we know that posture is a big part of it. And we already know that hockey players tend to be anterior tight. They tend to be rolled to their shoulders, and they tend to have tight hip flexors. And a lot of times you'll see them there. Their heads are tilting forward and their necks are out of alignment. And by getting rid of that, A, it allows me to see it faster as a coach. I can see cleaner lines, nothing's hiding it. And B, I think it takes away a little bit of that external, almost, I don't want to say force, or that cue, that feedback to getting the push forward. So by being up nice and tall, I'm constantly saying, stand tall, I want to see the posture correct. It allowed me to get rid of some of those hockey habits, but also some postural stuff as well that I thought was very important.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, you see kind of things written down or rules on the wall, and you just assume that it's, you know, just to make things difficult. But there's obviously there's a reason for why you're doing that stuff. So yeah, how do the kids take? So how do you set this right from the? Obviously, you set it right from the beginning, but these kids, I think, know when they come in that they're in for some more serious training. You even, I think on your website and on the walls at your facility, you have, you know, not for everybody. Talk a little bit about the not for everybody and why you make that so apparent in your facilities.
Yeah, that kind of evolved in the early days. And for sure, one of the things is you want to set the bar high from the beginning. And I think that's important. I even think that's important with in general, like youth in general. They're going to look to cut corners. They're going to look to cheat. They're going to take the easy route. That is how as humans we've evolved. We didn't die through evolution, die off because we found ways to sort of hack for the world. You know, how do we, you know, kill for food as, you know, back in the old days, or how we do things has kind of kept us alive and evolving. And I think in the process, we've learned to cheat the system to make it easier for us. But we all know that to be really successful, it takes some hard work and it takes people to get outside of the comfort zone. So right off the start, you set, I think, high expectations in a certain way. In the early days, when no one knew, yeah, you're right on when you said, you know, it's, you know, lose some people. Yeah, we had some guys who were like, I don't know if I like this. And to be honest with you, and some kids that thought they could get away with doing the status quo of, you know, showing up when I want or having some BS excuse for not being there, being all in, or even their lifestyle, whether it's the sleeping, the eating, the weekends, and so on. And early on, I had to, almost to be honest with you, I had to be a little overbearing. I think I still am overbearing in some regards. But early on, I knew that to establish what I thought was my vision, so you can call it the culture, my vision for how things would be best for the athletes. You know, I had to be, to be honest with you, I was walking the line. Like I wouldn't call myself the soup Nazi of it, but I was pretty tight a certain way because I knew that if I gave a little bit, I had to lose full control, and it needed to be a certain way to grow. Now I'm in a situation, it's a little different. Things have grown. I think sometimes the athletes manage it and police that themselves. A guy walks with a hat on, they're going to hear about it. Someone comes in with a sleeveless shirt, they're going to hear about it a little bit. So, hey, in the early days, I always have shirts in the cabinet. I'd pull a fresh shirt out and throw it on an athlete. And go, hey, you must have forgot your sleeves. Here's a shirt with sleeves on, you know, something like that. Just to like, you know, establish a friendly at the same time, very clean line of how things are going to be and expectation. And yeah, and then not for everyone kind of came along the way. And over the years, I remember when I had no money and I had no clients, we were bagging kids. You at least come. Always said, come give me a week. I'm not going to charge you for a week. You just come and see whether you like it or not. And in the early days, to be honest with you, part of that was I would kind of grind them. Not that it was the most science-based training, but we'd train hard, safe, correct movements, but we would train pretty hard early on, sort of to wean out those who may not be as committed to it, then also to set a bar for those who are into it. I think it sold itself. You know, people felt it, they were exhausted, they felt that they're getting stronger, and that set the bar high enough for me. And then there's days, and I remember my first summer when I was struggling to make a living, and I was writing people checks, and parents like, no, here's a check, I don't want your child. He's 17 or he's 18 years old, and his priorities include, you know, being at the local Cowboys nightclub on Thursday night, the rest of the hockey players, and he's showing up, not showing up, taking his time, and I'm not going to go for that. I've warned him, and that's enough. So I remember having people going, who do you think you are? And I'm like, well, just do my job. And so I think that's a little where that came from. Yeah, well, you know, I'm a little tougher on people than some people don't necessarily always agree with it, but I want to be able to say, hey, we did everything we could to help make you better. And it isn't just training. It isn't just physical. There's a side of that that, you know, finding that trust and finding that commitment in, and also for the athlete, finding who they really are and going, hey, you know what? Sometimes you're going to fall down flat in your face. It's what you do after that really defines who you are.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, you've built in accountability right into your culture there. I mean, you're teaching kids to be accountable for themselves and for their training and for their work ethic and all those things that they can control. And at the same time, you're teaching them what they need to know physically. So I think that's awesome. And obviously, you know, you've done really well with it. You just opened your third facility or kind of took over your third facility. And I guess last question here, Crash, is you know, your following is just outstanding. I mean, you are always up on your players, always up on what's going on with them, whatever league they're in, who's got this award, who had a hat trick last night. You know, you show tremendous support for your players, and your players, your athletes show tremendous support for you. What is it, do you think, that creates that? What makes you such a likable and an influential guy in the lives of your athletes?
Well, I love that question. I mean, be honest, yeah, I think it's our responsibility as coaches. That's why I like the term coach. We're mentors. We have to get the trust of these athletes. You know, we have their best in our minds and hearts. So you're there for them. You're gonna push them. So there's gonna be days and they're not happy. They're not liking the message. But in reality, they know the message is correct. And I think part of that is that you experience that. You're gonna. It's like they talk about when teams win, and I think it's really cool from that Players Tribune site. There's an article about the San Francisco Giants and a rookie player talking about when he got called up and having some of the big names and stars on the team going, hey, we need you. We need you to be who you are. Play your game. We need you. You're important to us. And this rookie call-up's like, well, you know, and I think that's how they establish that culture. You hear about the Chicago Blackhawks, and, you know, I was lucky enough to be around a player on the Blackhawks as they're coming from being an upcoming team to being a Stanley Cup team with all these Olympic stars. And you could see that in the same way Jonathan Toews and Duncan Keith and Seabrook and Sharp, and you go, okay, well, in our setting, well, what do? Well, for one, as a coach and as a group, and I'm sort of, I mean, I'm the face of it, but I'm not the only one. The players have to know, first of all, we're there for them. We have their best interest at heart. And one of the things is we're going to tell them the message sometimes when it's not the message that they want to hear. Sometimes if they need to hear it, and we're also going to be there for them. And I've also had, you know, some unfortunate things and have to be part of. A couple players over the years losing their lives at a young age, a player that was, an accident where someone got killed, and it's been some experiences that have even beaten me up, but it's been tough to be part of it. People need to know that you care about them, and I think that we need you kind of line from that article of the San Fran Giants kind of stuck with me, and it's been in my head the last few weeks since I read it, the last couple weeks, and I think that's kind of what it is. It's a little bit of a, you're part of something, you know, we're there for you, and you're important to us. And I think as a coach, whether it's a team setting or in our world, we're in the summertime, we're pulling players from all different teams. They're getting beaten up by their coaches, beaten up by scouts. You get NHL guys, and they're reading about how they're this and they're that. You get junior players constantly getting evaluated. It's a draft. They don't get drafted. They make this team. They don't get invited to the World Junior Team. And they just get the absolute junk beat out of them all the way in the band, and Michigan caught coaches yelling, mom and dad ripping on them. And along the way, I think they need to know that you care. You have a high bar for them, but it's because that's good for them. And I really do think young athletes need structure. They're going to walk the line. They're going to try to push you a little bit. They're going to see how far they can go on the wrong side. And when they know that you have an eye on it and you care, you're going to put them back in line. And I think that they understand that you're there for them. And when it comes to, yeah, you know what, like I try to track our players the best I can. And with a young family, it's way harder for me now, like I said, than it was even when my kids were younger and they're, you know, 6 and they're 4, not so much 11 and 8. I was going to 200 games a year, no question. I was going to 3 to 7 games a week. On Saturday, I'd go to 2 or 3 games back to back, minor hockey, junior, when NHL guys come to town, I go to those. And it gave me, obviously, a good read for the game, the read for the players. I'd watch games on TV. I'd always tape games of certain guys. I'd tape games, NHL games, and I would just fast forward their shifts. I don't need to see the rest of the game. I need to see them. And knowing that, I could give them feedback. I could see when certain guys, I could look in guys in their eyes, watch close up. A high definition TV gave me even more access to players. You can go, oh, you look rough, or you know, what's going on? You could just tell when guys are getting banged up by the looks in their eyes, and you get a close up. And I think that's part of what they need is someone, you know, keep in line. I'm not a fan. At the same time, I'm not their parent, and I'm not evaluating them. I'm just trying to help them. And I try not to approach our players too much with help unless they are coming to me and I can see that they need a little bit of feedback. And I also try not to make it easy. I think if you're constantly giving them answers in the pathway, they don't find it on their own. If you give them a little bit of direction, then they find the answer, what's going to make them better, I think they can, it's sort of like you can take a horse to water, but you cannot force them to drink. If you teach them, you know, they do it on their own, but you kind of direct them. I think they're better off to long-term that way.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, just that role of a mentor, that role of a teacher, you know, I think you hit it right on the head, just letting them know you care. And that goes a long, long way for a lot of kids. And, by showing them that, they're going to give you the work, and by them giving you the work, then you get the results you want too. So,
yeah, you know, it's funny that, so, you know, you think about it, like in our industry as trainers, I mean, no matter what it is, you put yourself out there. So I'm on Twitter, a little bit on Instagram, and I'm here. So some guys are going to like me and some people aren't going to like me. I mean, other peers are going to have crashes, nice cockies, he swears, he's this, he's that, he comes off as this. Okay, great. Some people like you. Some people, hey, you know, I was having lunch this summer with one of my guys, Mike Green from the Red Wings, and I was kind of joking about it, and he's like, he goes, it's every day for us. He goes, the worst thing you can do is you think about it. And that was kind of the first time I think he understood that it wasn't just him constantly being evaluated and people trying to undercut, steal your clients or doing this, but ripping him, oh, I can't play D, can't do this, he's whatever. And for the players to understand, like, they're not the only ones. I think that's key as well. It's a tough part of our job. And I always say, like, you know, we've done a pretty good job of getting pretty high on the mountain, I guess, of sorts. And when you're high up, you're a target of everybody else trying to get there. And whether they're stealing your clients or trying to rip your credibility or who you are. And for the players, they're in the same boat all the time. They're always being evaluated, media, scouts, and fans, so on. And that's part of the deal, I guess, is if you want to be at the top, you're going to have to deal with the rest.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, good stuff, Crash. Well, I appreciate you taking the time with me. Keep up the good work out there. I think you set a model for all coaches to kind of, you know, care about the guys that they're working with, not just making them better, but also looking out for their best interests along the way. So, yeah, good stuff, and I appreciate you coming on with us, and we'll look forward to hearing more from you soon.
Great. Thanks again.
Well, guys, that does it for the 32nd episode of the Hockey Strength Podcast. Thanks so much to Doug Crashley for joining us. He's definitely a really passionate guy. He brings a great energy to what he does at his facility. I think that's something we can all follow. Guys, if you could, please follow us on Twitter. We're at joinus@HSC. We just got started and we want to make sure you know about it. We're also on Facebook. We share a lot of information on our social media that doesn't make the site. So check us out there for more great content about training your hockey players. Also, remember to head to GreatLakesHockeyStrength.com to register for the clinic. You can also save your seat for the free pre-conference on Friday, April 29th. In the beginning, we thought this would just be a really solid local event, but at last year's clinic, we ended up having people in from Canada and as far west as Wyoming. So check it out. We hope we can make your way to Ann Arbor on April 29th and 30th of 2016. Thanks for joining us, everybody. This is Brian Sippets for the Hockey Strength Podcast. Until next time, be sure to train smart and check out HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com, the world's best resource for training hockey players. Take care, everybody.